Hello, I'm Felicia Michelle.
I'm Yael Teagle.
And Yael, I have a very pressing question to ask you, super serious.
Okay, I'm ready.
Do you believe in magic?
I do believe in magic.
I mean, how can you not? Look at this magical set we're on for Leverage Redemption.
I'm so excited to share the secrets of the magic of Leverage Redemption with the audience. But first, let's show them some magic.
All right, one, two, three, poof!
We know these characters, we love these characters, but for those of you who are new to the Leverage Redemption team, let's find out what is leverage.
I would describe the world of leverage like this. Let's say you have a problem and you've got nobody to turn to, you have no family, you can't go to the cops, the infrastructure's all messed up, right? You have a phone number that you can call and Parker answers. And essentially you've got a team of thieves and grifters that are gonna come to your side and help you get done what you need to get done. Like Robin Hood, but a little crazier.
I think leverage is the kid in high school who can see some things that aren't wrong and is super talented and super good at what they do, and them having the courage to stand up to a bully. You know, I think that's what leverage is. I think leverage is coming together with a group of friends and working on something productive instead of destructive. And I think leverage is just a damn fun time.
Leverage has always had the tagline, the powerful take what they want and we take it back for them. And I think the timing has never been more relevant than it is now. People are feeling divided, the landscape has changed, people are feeling powerless, and I think that people will relate to this show in a way that they didn't even first time around.
If you ask somebody what leverage is, you're gonna get different answers from everyone. My answer would be, as my character, we throw punches for people that can't throw punches. I grew up with family that always worked. They worked very hard their whole lives, and sometimes they got the crap kicked out of them, and you know, legally, there's nothing you can do about it. The fat cat wins, and you just have to take it. And that's what's fun about this show, is that somewhere, someone in America or the world has had that happen to them almost every single time, but they couldn't do anything about it. We do something about it.
My favorite moment in the episodes of Leverage Redemption are always what we call the gloat moment. It's the end of the episode where we get to smile at the bad guys and gloat about getting one over on them. And it's always the scene where we're together and celebrate our victory for ourselves and for you, the audience.
I think the thing I'll remember most is how in a time when things were so dark for so many people, we were able to come together and make something fun and beautiful and uplifting. And I think knowing that audiences have been waiting and wanting and anticipating and that they have something to look forward to, that's been the greatest experience.
John Rogers wrote a really nice sort of mission statement that he disseminated out to all of us when we started that says Leverage is a show that lives 3 feet off the ground. It's not fantasy land and it's not grounded in total reality. It's just slightly heightened reality.
It is high stakes, fast pace.
You can take a show like that and the comedy can go very farcical or the drama could go very dark. And it sort of gets away with it because it has this built-in excuse of saying, this is really what we call competence porn. This is really, really talented people doing things that they're really good at, that you won't know how they're doing it, but you'll really enjoy the fact that they're pulling it off. But the fact that there's a magic trick involved sort of ungrounds it from having to be something that is reality-based.
It's one of those worlds where you can sort of live out the fantasy, the imagination, the dream of going in there, fighting for what's right, fighting for what's yours in a very cool way, and actually coming out on top.
I've been so blessed in my career to get to do all kinds of different projects, whether it's feature films or things directly for broadcast. But for the most part, there's been a consistency of style and tone. And every time we've had the opportunity to make something in that style and tone, we got a little better at it. We learned a lot of lessons. And so I would say this show really brings together everything I ever learned doing The Librarians, The Original Leverage, The Outpost, most recently Almost Paradise, and going all the way back to Independence Day and Stargate. So this is an opportunity to kind of reach into the tool bag and pull out all the tools from my whole life.
Dean Devlin Productions usually are impressive because of the production value we're able to put on the screen despite the budget spent. And that continues to be true in this. And that really speaks to the creativity of the personnel involved, is that there's usually a creative solution that is equally dynamic and a lot more cost effective.
Felicia, what is production design?
I guess it's the design of the production.
I mean, that makes sense. Let's
go knock on their door and actually find out what they do.
Yeah, let's find out.
So I'm Randall Groves. I'm a production designer. Production designer, I oversee art department, construction, special effects to an extent. I work closely with props, the greens department, the paint, the scenics. So like the triad is director, DP, production designer, and all the great craftspeople fall below that.
Where are we?
So we are physically in Jefferson Parish, Louisiana, just outside of New Orleans. This is a sound stage that we've created. Electric Entertainment has multiple sound stages in this building. This particular set is our HQ set. And this is modeled after a style of building started in the mid-1800s called a Creo townhouse.
Okay.
And what happens is you would come through these carriage doors with your horse and buggies at night.
Okay.
And in our world, this is an actual exterior that exists in the French Quarter. We open those doors, Matt. We open those doors, we end up on our set.
Randall Groves is my favorite production designer on the planet, and partially because he melds both sides of his brain together on the show. On one hand, he's a wonderful artist, and he appreciates art and architecture and visuals. But he also has a very pragmatic background, having been our construction coordinator many, many years ago. So he really thinks of the practicalities of how can we build these sets? How can we do them? How can we get the biggest, best set for the amount of money we have and the amount of time we have to build it? And he melds those two disciplines together and gives us amazing sets like the one we're in now, which may be my favorite set he's ever designed.
Dean Devlin, Mark Roskin, and myself have been together for over 100 episodes of television, a couple movies, some pilots, and we have a really great shorthand. And they are lovely with me. It's a dream gig because they give me massive latitude. And so I kind of proposed to them how I saw our new HQ, which, like, we made it for the Portland version and the Boston version. New Orleans would have its own special flavor throughout.
The great thing about having Randall Groves as production design for Leverage Redemption is that Randall came out of construction. He actually was originally a construction manager and then became a production designer on Librarians, which is another show we did with Dean Devlin up in Portland. And that means he knows what it costs to build everything. He can look at a blank space and not just figure out what can I fill this with, but what can I build in here to transform it into something else. He's a yes and crew member. He will say, like, yes, I can get you that, and I can make it look even better. The frustrating thing about Randall is he always wants it to look much better and much different. And there's times where I've been on calls with him and he's like, ah, man, I just didn't do that. You know, we just ran out of time and money on this set. And then I look at the set of the camera. I'm like, this is gorgeous. What is your problem? He's like, well, you know, we used that door like four episodes ago. Like, nobody's going to remember the door. It looks completely different. He took one room and made it look like 10 different rooms over the course of the show. And I challenged the audience to figure out what room I am talking about. And that's the thing, is because he's just got a builder's eye, a craftsman's eye, not just a production designer's eye. He was able to pull off real miracles with a really limited budget under just really difficult COVID constraints.
The team still has to stay on the down low. So they've built their headquarters in this old music hall in the French Quarter, but it's disguised from the outside.
This HQ is, my concept was is that we've taken over a Creo townhouse in the quarter. The last incarnation of it, which was closed many, many years ago, was Val's Juke Joint. Val's Juke Joint was a music venue, and among many other things, for a number of years. And all throughout Val's Juke Joint and throughout the stage for the set, you see the old handbills that we created, over 100 handbills of the acts that came through Val's Juke Joint over the years.
We have bigger and better sets than ever before. Our headquarters set is just astonishing. We all walked in and it took our breath away and we felt at home straight away. And the creative team are just building bigger and better sets for us. It's very exciting.
And headquarters is where we spend 25% of our time. And Dean gave me 3 weeks in Los Angeles to pre-production before we headed to New Orleans to work with a set designer. We built a model of the entire set. And, you know, 25% of our time is a lot of time to be spending in one set. So I got a little bit extra time to design that set, and it's super crew friendly. We've got tons of nooks and crannies and places to set scenes and have intimate conversations and bring the crew together. It's a multi-story set with a courtyard and a breezeway, and it matches up to an exterior in the French Quarter.
I would say for me, the most memorable set, we are sitting in the most memorable set, New HQ. I remember when I first saw this, and it just brought back just a wave of memories of us shooting at our old HQ in Portland and in LA, you know, and when I saw it, I said, oh my God, the fans are gonna love this. It's incredible, it really is. I mean, our art department did a fantastic job, and they've always been top notch, but you know, this brings me so much joy.
It's a statement piece for me. It's one of my favorite sets I've ever created.
And this is just one set.
One set, and so every week we build 6 to 10,000 feet of new set. So this right here is about 3,500 to 4,000 feet of finished space. So we build twice this, not in this level of finishes, but for every set, every episode, we have.
What is that like?
So we read a script.
Actively shooting the show.
When we're actively shooting, we read a script and literally 8 to 10 days later, we're filming that script. So we have to, it's breakneck speed.
But reading a script that has so many things that are big imagery or big actions, and then you see them come to life, you actually show up to the place that they're doing that thing at, is really cool. Like, I think my second day on set, I was in a plane hangar, and I was like, oh, that's what we're doing. We're acting in a plane hangar today. I didn't get to do the cool stuff, being like next to the planes or anything, but how cool, who does that? Who's like, I acted next to a plane today.
Wilson, should've called, we'd have been waiting for you.
Think someone's gonna try and jump me, take 100 kilos of gold?
It is Panama.
So it all starts with the words on the page. They're gonna dictate kind of the tone and where we're going. And, you know, the basic inspiration is what is, you know, we're Robin Hood. You know, we steal from the rich and give back to the poor people who are done wrong by the evil corporation. So each one will have its different flavor of who's the mark, who's the victim, and who is, you know, who are we trying to take down? So they really guide my decision-making process through the design. A lot of times we're gonna inherit a distinct look within a location, so that starts to mold the flavor of the episode.
One of my favorite sets, there wasn't much to the set, but it was just sort of this unfinished loft in a high-rise, you know, apartment building. And seeing the way they allowed Kane to like bust through walls and do like that sort of, that was really impressive to me. I mean, the set maybe not have been like striking because it was just a plain apartment, but a set that can allow him to do that was awesome.
This is the third floor attic of our HQ, which is Val's juke joint. And this third floor was just a one-off for one episode. It had 8 pages we're gonna shoot in it, which is quite a bit. That's, you know, that's out of a 50-page script, you know, it's a pretty good portion. So we knew we wanted to pay a little bit of attention to it, plus we wanted to make sure it was gonna fit within the motif of the HQ being the third floor. So, you know, I was just inspired by the age, the old oak beams and the plaster wall and the textures therein. And it was a Halloween episode as well, so there was a little bit of spookiness to it. And the end result is, we're gonna end up keeping this set, and it's gonna be written into future episodes because it turned out so beautiful and the crew responded and the cast, you know, puts them in a place where they can really, really flourish.
Randall Groves, our production designer, is absolutely brilliant. I can say from working with him on the TNT version of the show, he is a true artist. When you see a set that he has designed, it's beautiful, it fits the location, and it's most of all fun. I think when we decided to shoot the show in New Orleans, Randall really like steeped himself in the city, and our sets are just unbelievable and really evocative of a truly unique American city.
No con would be complete without the costuming, and this show has done some wild, wild looks. Let's take a look at the costuming department.
Nadine Haters.
Hi, I'm Nadine Haters, and I am the costume designer on Leverage Redemption.
Our costume designer, Nadine Haters, has been with us since the beginning of the show, and she's really like an extra character. She knows our characters better than we do ourselves.
207 is going to be 100 episodes, which we are prepping right now. We're prepping that episode. And I will have done 99 of them. I did not do the pilot. And then when it came back around, Dean called me and I said, of course I want to come back. So I did.
She always seamlessly puts us together so slickly, but also she has these great dramatic moments where she can build pieces for us.
There's like so much magic that happens in here. That's from yesterday. So I have dual fitting rooms, and a lot of times I do two fittings at once because time is tight.
Whatever you throw at her, she will handle. If it's a 1970s period piece set in swinging London, or a medieval fair with people dressed as knights and squires, she just rolls with it. It means a lot to the tone of the show, both the authenticity and quite frankly, the fun. When you see her colors popping off the screen, it just means so much to the show.
Favorite con look from the first season. We had a lot of good ones, but the one that comes to mind is the rolling on the river job with Parker and the Belle of the ball. Her character's name was Belle. And that was my first instinct, was to make her the belle of the ball. So while everyone else is in proper evening attire, Parker's completely bonkers. And that's what we love about her.
We've had a lot of fun moments. One that comes to mind is episode 3, and it's where we take over a riverboat casino. And Nadine Haters, our costume designer, built a Southern Belle costume for Parker, and it's one of those like massive hoop skirts where she's practically knocking people over as she walks through this casino.
She had to be in the water, and she had to lose the skirt, the whole gag of it.
To build it in a way that she could take the skirt off and have something underneath that was appropriate, you know, and be swimming in the water in, because her and Elliot come out of the river in it. So the idea that we came up with was to make a bloomer. Believe me, it was crazy amounts of work.
20 yards of tulle just in the skirt.
And we had to build everything in pieces so that we could take things off, put things back on. Like this is the bodice.
Stunts had her own.
And then Stunts had one.
One of the dress form in the little dress shop.
It was so wide and it was so narrow in the space, in the set that Randall built, that getting her to walk through, she had to like shimmy around things, but it had really good bounce on it. So when Beth was walking, she would just bounce it up and down. It's hilarious. She was taking out people and drinks and props. We had to have a sneaker on her because, I mean, to maneuver this whole thing. It's quite disgusting. And the bugs were so heavy in the pond. It was awful. And they were such troopers about it. Like, we blasted them with hot water to keep them wet. But yeah, the gloves did not last the time to tell the story. But yeah, we did little stripy gloves, the same colors. Fun. It was a really fun costume.
And she knows these actors and she knows these characters. And so she finds the intersection where the characters have their own identities, but they reflect the actor underneath. You know, it's a synthesis. You know, at no point do you feel she's ladling Sophie Devereaux onto Gina. She's finding Sophie Devereaux inside of Gina. And when you have somebody like Nadine, I will absolutely tell an absolutely true story. Off of the first show in Leverage, I was directing an episode and she brought me this wardrobe choice and I hated it. I really just was like, no, I'm not going to do that. We're going to lose that item of clothing. As soon as we get out on the set, I'm going to just politely, look, it happens, right? A director doesn't agree with a costume designer. And we got her in this, and the actress stepped under the light. And I realized she balanced the color of the fabric against the light that she knew would be in that space. And it was the most gorgeous thing I've ever put on film. And I'm like, oh, shut up and trust Nadine. And that is basically a pretty good motto with Nadine. Shut up, trust Nadine. It's going to be great.
Nadine Hayter and I go way back and we're dear friends. And we also have a bit of a shorthand because we've done so much together. But early on in an episode, we'll exchange notes about color palette. Where are you going? And if she says, I've got this beautiful periwinkle pantsuit for Sophie, then, you know, I'll try and find something that'll act well with that and enhance, you know, that. And vice versa, if I say I feel really strongly that this set is going to have, you know, warm earth tones and rich woods and things of that nature, you know, maybe she'll use that to inspire her costuming. But she's phenomenal. The costuming on the show is just incredible, and it's a joy to work with her.
We had a episode called The Jackal, and The Jackal, it was a famous grifter back in London in the 70s. We get to wear period clothes, and we had built a British tavern, and we had to find left-hand drive cars. So it's a nice little break for all the crew to do something outside of the box. The wardrobe department gets to make funky clothes. Transportation gets to source cool cars. The art department is, you know, designing things in 1970 in London. And the actors get to have fun with it as well. And anytime they get to wear a different hat, it's always enjoyable.
Wow, the magic of Leverage Redemption really is magical. We couldn't have done it without all of you. Thank you so much for checking this out. Of course, we will be giving you more exclusive looks as we get ready for season 2 of Leverage Redemption. I'm Yael Teagle. Thank you to my co-host, Felicia Michelle. We'll see you next time.